everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Tom, engineering and producing the show. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster program. We have a very full hour for you on this Thursday, February the 18th, 2021. We're in our 11th year on the radio here in Tucson in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Richard Carmona served as the 17th Surgeon General of the United States and a Vice Admiral in the Public Health Service Commission Corps. He's now Chief of Health Innovation at the Resort Spa Canyon Ranch in Tucson. He's also the Vice Chairman there. He is a Distinguished Professor at the University of Arizona in the Zuckerman College of Public Health. Dr. Carmona, last spring, was named by UA President Dr. Robert Robbins to lead the university's Campus Reentry Task Force. As director of that task force, he heads the development and execution of the return to the campus plan. We're with Dr. Carmona with me in studio. Dr. Carmona, always a pleasure to see you.
Hi, Bill. Nice to see you. Pleasure to be with you again.
Yeah, you know, I look back, everything went south on St. Patrick's Day in 2020. It's about a month away from a full year. What's the big takeaway of this public health crisis that this country has not seen since 1918, 1919?
Well, Bill, I think the big issue is that we had an opportunity to come together as a single nation devoid of public parties, addressing a common threat, and we failed to do that because of hyperpartisan politics, conspiracy theorists. And because of that, we're in the hole for a half a million deaths and mounting, as well as huge economic and health debt and, you know, unemployment. And, the list is just terrible. And, when we do best as a nation, when we are challenged, we come together as one to fight that challenge, whatever it may be.
People are still freaking out about this shot. The latest survey showing that only 50% of those surveyed say they definitely will take the shot. The others cite concerns about safety. 25% say they will not take the shot. There is 25%, that one in four, that needs to be convinced and still can be convinced.
Well, Bill, the challenge, of course, is many of the people are confused. They get missed messages from elected and appointed officials. You know, they're divided along party lines. We have a nation that up until recently looked at a mask as a political statement more than a health statement. And so the challenge with people exercising their personal rights and not being vaccinated, it affects all of us because we have to achieve herd immunity as fast as we can, meaning we need as much of the population as possible to get vaccinated so that the virus has no place to go and then it goes dormant. If a quarter or more of the population chooses not to become vaccinated, it will prolong the pandemic. More mutations can occur. More people will get sick. More people may die. So for all those reasons, we need to come together as one nation. Get your vaccination if you are medically able to. Obviously, there are some exceptions, but for the majority of the population, they should get their vaccinations, not only to help them and their families, but to contribute to the extinguishing of this very lethal virus.
And the people on social media are saying, well, I'm afraid of the side effects. Well, my goodness, what if you get COVID and go on a ventilator?
Yeah,
that would be a horrible way to die.
If you look at the data, the side effects are fairly minor. You know, sore arms. Sometimes you feel like you have a cold for a day. You feel a little soreness, but the benefit is so great, it is worth that inconvenience. Not only because of protecting you, but protecting people around you, and you're adding to the protection in your community. So again, I would encourage the listeners to speak to their health professionals, whoever they go to, ask those questions, find reputable information online, go to hhs.gov, you know, Health and Human Services, go to the Pima County Health Department, go to DHS, the State Health Department, and look at carefully curated and vetted information that is not politically motivated, but tells the truth about the challenges before us.
How are things going at the University of Arizona?
Well, the things are going terrific at the university, really. You know, it's a very bad situation, but we have this extraordinary faculty that has come together, and just about everybody there is participating, from the innovative basic science that we've moved forward, and some of it taking hold at the national level, the wastewater management, some of our immunology, some of the tests that we've developed, which have all become, you know, noted nationally. President Robbins has been terrific as a leader in tasking people appropriately, and also inciting, you know, innovation and compassion at the same time. We recognize that we still in our community have populations that can't get a vaccination. They're too far away. They live in rural areas. They can't drive. We work tirelessly every day to put programs together. Dr. Christ at the state level, the governor, you know, we're in contact every day trying to manage those resources as best we can to ensure that everybody who needs that vaccine gets that vaccine as quickly as possible.
790-2040, 790-2040. Dr. Carmona would be happy to entertain any questions that our listeners have. Today, the University of Arizona transitions to a state-run site as a point of distribution for the vaccine. The hope is to operate 24/7, serve up to 6,000 people per day. There has been some controversy, Dr. Carmona, from city and Pima County officials who are worried that this 24/7 potential 24/7 site is taking vaccine away from existing sites here in town.
Yeah, so we've had that discussion multiple times, and there's not any truth. Mr. Huckleberry, President Robbins, myself speak on a regular basis. Dr. Cullen, the other leaders in the county at the state level, Dr. Christ, are in conversations on a daily basis. There's a limited amount of vaccines that are available. So we have at the university stood up a pod to be able to provide additional vaccines. We also partner with the county to assist the county. And that was a partnership we started months ago, working together, because we realized the city, the county, and the university all have responsibility for 1.1 million people in Pima County. So we decided, let's work together. Let's share information. Partnership has worked very well. But now, like President Robbins and I are concerned, for instance, the university has a much larger footprint, Pinal County, Santa Cruz County, Graham, Greenlee. So we're looking at how can we get to those rural areas and augment the existing resources that are there. But the state ultimately determines who gets those vaccinations. We don't make that determination. We will vaccinate everybody that we get vaccinations for. But the city needs more. The county needs more. The university needs more. We are, in a way, all struggling to get that from the state, but it's the state that makes the determination based on population density and so on.
Case numbers are really going down. Do you think we're starting to see the effect of getting vaccine in people's arms?
I think that's part of it. I think that we're seeing more compliance with public health practices, washing hands, masking up, staying, you know, socially distant. You know, people are COVID exhausted now. They yearn for, you know, connection to their friends, their families, the hug, a high five. They can't do that anymore. And it's been very difficult. The mental health consequences of this are very significant. So we're not dismissing that. But in answer to your question, we're seeing hospitalizations are slightly decreasing. Transmissibility, the metrics that we look at every day, we have a 24-hour situation report that is distributed to the president of the university, the city, the county have it as well, and we share that information so we know what happens on a daily basis. Numbers are encouraging. We're moving in the right direction, but we are nowhere near out of this yet and cannot become complacent. We must continue to mask up. As we say in the university, mask up, bear down, stay socially distant, and practice hand washing frequently.
The message to some university students has not been received, and I guess that's to be understandable, that college students are going to be college students to a certain extent, are going to want a party. But there was a party of over 200 people recently that that kind of got out of control and had to be broken up.
Yes.
What can be done at this point to get the word out?
Well, let me mention, first of all, that At the university, we have put together a number of teams that are dealing with this issue, from ambassadors who roam the campus and the fraternities and sororities to make sure there is compliance, working with the UAPD and Tucson Police Department as well. And if you look at the numbers, we've done pretty well. As Dean Kendall Washington said, who's the dean of students, she's been fantastic to work with. We do everything we can to inspire the students to do the right thing. When they don't comply, then they are referred to the student's dean to be able to administer appropriate discipline. And in some cases, students have been expelled. In some cases, there's been disciplinary action because they fail to comply with public health practices, which are mandated for their health and safety, but that of the community as well. But overall, the dean will tell you, as she tells us, the students are doing a pretty good job. Most of them are compliant. Most of them wear masks. Most of them want to stay on campus, and they understand that if they don't comply, it'll be less likely that we can keep the university open.
Will there be, the next stage is what at the university, bringing more students back or
what? Yeah, so what we do is on a weekly basis, we have a public health advisory team, which are fantastic scientists in public health that brief the president, myself, and others on a weekly basis. All of the data you read are scientists crunching numbers every day. Then they make recommendations to us. The president gets recommendation from numerous sources, and we sit and talk and decide when, when is it safe to move forward a little bit? Numbers are down. We actually have metrics that we track. If they stay stable, if they decrease in the right way, and we have a window of a week or two, and it looks like it's sustainable, then we consider opening up a little more and bringing in a few more students. So right now, the only students that are on campus are those that absolutely need to be here because their degree requires it. A chemistry major who has to go to a laboratory, a scientist doing research, things like that. Yet, almost 100% of our labs are open. And again, because we've worked very, very hard with good public health practices to keep the research going, the dollars being generated, the jobs that are there are being assisted by doing that. So we're very proud of that. That's it sounds easy, but very difficult to be able to adhere to that in these environments where you're constantly moving, doing research, and so on. But we've done real well.
We're going to pause right here in our conversation with Dr. Richard Carmona. Again, 790-2040. If you have any questions, we'll keep Dr. Carmona over for another 10-minute segment. But right now, Dr. Carmona, I want to tell people about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. You know, we all need comfort food right about now, don't we, Doctor? I bet you could go for something like that. A cinnamon roll or one of those Kringles are one of the wonderful pastries. The blueberry muffin sounds pretty good right now. Open for lunch right now, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They're on the web at monasdanishbakery.com. Put in your order on the web. Call them at 579-1958. 59, and put in your order and pick up your bakery goods or just go into the bakery directly. We'll be right back in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios with Dr. Richard Carmona.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined, because without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. A very full hour as usual. Dr. Richard Carmona, who served as the 17th Surgeon General of the United States, with me in studio. He also has been tasked with the University of Arizona's Campus Reentry Task Force, heading that up along with Dr. Robert Robbins at the University of Arizona. And we had a couple of questions during the break for Dr. Carmona. I'll just reply. I've got them up on the screen. The cold weather is delaying vaccine stocks, Dr. Carmona. What is the impact on the local pods, the point of distributions?
It's everybody in the nation is being affected now because of the weather. The critical access airports, like in Dallas and others in the Midwest, are being shut down. So fortunately, we are working around that as much as we can. The United States Army Logistical Command has been in charge of logistics, but they have partnered with the civilian UPS, FedEx, and so on to get vaccines here. So every state is having this problem right now because of the challenge to the supply chain. But we're doing everything we can to work around that. We are just found out today we were getting close to running out of vaccines here at the university, and the county was also running low. But I think we're going to get a resupply that'll take us a few more days. But hopefully when the weather breaks, we'll be seeing more vaccines coming in. And as you know, the president has authorized more funding and support to make more vaccines available across the country.
Second question from a listener about Pfizer versus Moderna. Mm-hmm. Is one better than the other?
No, I think the most important vaccine you get is the one that they can put in your arm. And right now with Pfizer and Moderna, there's some slight differences. But for you, the patient, the recipient, really, they work equally effectively. Side effects are about the same. The second dose, the only difference is one is 3 weeks, one is about 4 weeks. But overall, I would not worry about either. When I got mine, I didn't even ask which one it was. I found out it was Pfizer, but it was random. I was scheduled, and I went for my vaccine like everyone else. And had it been Moderna, I would have gotten that one because I am convinced that they are fairly equivalent, and that's what the literature has produced in the studies that have come out thus far.
Did you have any side effects?
Very little. My arm was a little sore the first time, and the second time I had nothing whatsoever.
All right. People are really concerned about variants. It's almost every day we're hearing some variant for this virus. Most recently, we've heard that the California variant has hooked up with the merged with the United Kingdom variant. Viruses are going to do this, correct, Dr. Richard Carmona?
Yeah, all organisms, humans included, mutate. Your genome mutates. The genes, you know, because as you're making new cells and exchanging genetic information, different pieces of that may sometimes change, and that's all a mutation is. These viruses mutate because they're trying to survive in our world. And so they mutate just like bacteria when you hear about antibiotic resistance. The bacteria changes its immune function so that the old antibiotic doesn't work. So then we have to do a new antibiotic. Viruses you don't use antibiotics for, but mutation is the same thing. The more they are struggling to survive in our environment, they will change so they become more transmissible or they become more lethal. The good news is the vast majority of mutations are clinically insignificant. They don't change anything. But we still have to monitor because every once in a while a change is significant. So in this virus, for instance, the coronavirus we're dealing with now is much like the old SARS virus and MERS virus, the pulmonary disease that we had in the past. And after a mutation, it becomes the virus we have today. So that's why all of you hear all of these discussions. But for the most part, the changes that we've seen thus far have little consequence as far as affecting the vaccine. Some appear to make it more transmissible. One is in question now. Does it make it more lethal? But that's still questionable. So the good news is the vast majority of these are not changing the way we are going to address them.
In 1918, the flu, the influenza,
yes,
it moved rather than being more deadly, actually became less deadly and less transmittable, I believe. And in fact, even in our current flu shot that we take, there is a genetic memory of that 1918 virus.
Right.
So
yeah.
What's to say that these viruses may become less transmittable and less deadly?
Certainly that's a possibility. Every mutation doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get more lethal.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, of course, is when you look at it on an evolutionary scale, we humans mutate, viruses mutate in order to survive. And in order to survive, you need to develop characteristics that protect you in that environment. So most of the time, the transmissibility, when it is clinically significant, makes that virus harder to treat. It's easier to get into your cells. It makes you sicker. But fortunately, most of the mutations thus far have not made any of those significant changes. But the ones that are looking that way are being tracked.
Getting back to the rollout of this vaccine, how do we get, there should be, I believe, a national, some kind of public service campaign going on. Is that in the works?
There are a number of organizations on a national level now. Mostly they are startups, people I used to work with in government at the federal level, who are advocating for a vaccination day, who are advocating for a day that not only we vaccinate, but let's pay homage to our first-line responders. So a lot of those things are in the works right now. At the federal level, the new administration, I think, is doing the best it can to get a consistent, scientifically-based message out as to what needs to be done, as well as legislation that will allow for more vaccines and being able to reach more people. You know, we still have very low vaccination rates across the country.
Even with the influenza, it's only about half.
Yeah, well, and this is a good example, Bill, because, you know, most years we may have 60, 80,000 people dying just from influenza.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want the flu shot. They don't believe in it. They have all these conspiracy theories. And yet none of those are true. And so we should get our flu shot every year. And in this case, everybody who is able to should get a vaccine against COVID.
And what about those flu numbers? They are at historic lows, Dr. Mm-hmm. Carmona.
Well, interesting that it's thought that because of the hand washing, the masking up, and the public health measures we put in place, the added value has been to reduce the transmission of common flu.
Right.
Yes.
And wearing the mask has probably been
hand washing, okay, and social distancing.
Here's a question for you. Will the masks be around for a while?
That's a debatable thing. I think it will for a while because I think...
On transportations, on planes, on buses, on subways.
Well, I think a lot of things are happening. Filtration systems are better. Sanitation systems are better. Use of ultraviolet light to keep heart surfaces clean. All of those bring added value. The mask is going to be important until such a time we feel that there's not risk. The other side of that, though, is how long will people be compliant? It's tough to wear a mask all the time. And sometimes, you have people that have pulmonary disease. You have older people. They feel claustrophobic.
Yeah.
So I think that for the foreseeable future, masks will be the order of the day. As we get through the summer and into the fall, we'll have to see how that plays out.
One more quick question that came in on email for me. Why do some people have a reaction to the shot? I mean, if you don't have a reaction, does that mean the vaccine is not working? It's a good question.
It's a very good question. And the issue there is that everybody's immune system is different. So genetically, you're programmed to have these functions of immunity, and you have different types of cells that are involved in the immunity. So that's why some people never get a cold, but other people do get a cold. Some people will get an allergic reaction. Some people won't, because the immune system is a function of your genetic inputs from your mom and your dad, and then all the things you've been exposed to as a child that you develop immunity, okay? And then you get a vaccination that gives you more. So as you said, Bill, you did okay. I've had people say, gee, my arm hurt for days.
I had a sore arm for a day or two.
And mine hurt for a day, and then the second one was nothing. So I think the variability just reflects the variability and diversity of immunity of a population of 340 million people in the United States.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Carmona. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, the place to go for all of your gardening needs. They have 13 acres of amazing plants, 3384 East River Road, their website, greenthingsaz.com. And they also have Zocalo Village with the amazing Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture and lighting and all sorts of beautiful things. 50 years. Well, they're into their 51st year at Green Things. The website for Zocalo Village is zocalovillage.com. Guests appear on our live line courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio, Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is the program manager and research scientist for the University of Arizona's International Research and Applications Program and research affiliate at the Climate Assessment for the Southwest at the University of Arizona Institute of the Environment. Very serendipitous to bring you in, Dr. Guido. Zach, always good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
What a crazy week this has been. You know, this storm that has just really hammered much of the United States, certainly the midsection parts of the South, it's being called, Zach, a once-in-a-generation storm. Some of these records, and there have been dozens of new lows. I mean, places like Oklahoma City recording temperatures just unheard of. Places like Memphis below zero. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, and it's been quite a week, and I really feel for many of the people in the country. And I actually feel pretty fortunate to live in the Southwest here. We've been on the
we complain about our drought and everything.
Yeah,
but this is one case where I'm kind of glad I'm right here, right now.
You know, and we're kind of on the western margins of that big dive in the jet stream that brought all that cold air into as far south as Texas. And you're right, like there's been some. I mean, some of the pictures that are out of Texas, for example, are heartbreaking. And I think as we speak right now, something like 500,000 people are still without power. Houses are like 25 degrees inside.
I think you mentioned
it to me, which I hadn't seen, but people are burning firewood.
They are.
Furniture for firewood.
They're breaking up firewood for furniture. I mean, it's just unheard of things. Your particular business, the climate scientists, are being quoted in stories that I'm seeing all over the place. And some of their reactions, Zach Guido, are all over the place when it comes to what is behind this.
Oh, yeah.
And long-term implications. Does climate change necessarily mean not just perhaps hotter summers, but colder events like we're seeing here?
Right. It's a little bit counterintuitive.
Yeah.
And I guess I should say that whenever there's these kinds of events that have such disruption and cause impacts, and that are quite frankly extreme from a climate perspective as well, the questions of climate change will always come up. And it's also interesting because these are the parts of the conversation about human-caused climate change that are the most debated even among the scientific community. And yeah, I think the question of, you know, was this nudged by climate change is quite frankly at the bleeding edge of some climate scientists or science. There is some theories that that in a warming world, like a warmer Arctic, basically means that the strong circumpolar jet stream slackens a little bit. And you know, if you look down on the North Pole, you see this in the wintertime. You see this band of really strong air that can keep that cold air bottled up. But if that weakens, and this is called the polar vortex.
Right.
And if that weakens, then that cold Arctic air can seep out. And that happens every, maybe not to the extent that has happened this year, but, you know, a couple years ago, I think January 2019, there was another very cold outbreak. You know, tens of people were killed in Chicago, for example. It didn't come as far south as it has this time. But there's research that suggests that in a warming world that polar vortex may slacken a little bit and counterintuitively lead to the polar vortex sort of wobbling into the U.S. and causing colder conditions, more so in the east than in the west. I would say that, again, just to stress that this is not a view that has yet stood the test of time, and the scientific community still debates this, whether or not there's actually a physical mechanism or what that may be. The data itself is sort of all over the place. So to the extent that climate change had a role in this, you know, I certainly would not, I'm not going to venture to say one way or the other. It's not my area of active research, but it's fairly hotly debated. I guess I would step back and also say that when we think about climate change and we think about changing the sort of energy balance in the Earth by increasing the greenhouse gases, you know, there's no reason to expect that our weather wouldn't change. And there's no reason to expect that it wouldn't change in ways that yet we don't quite know. And so from that perspective,
it's a work in progress.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. And I think we need to keep our minds open. And I think that's the science is playing out. It's interesting that the science is, you know, it's CNN or New York Times and Washington Post, all these major newspapers are wanting to like make that debate public. And I think it can have the case of, depending on what you read, like being more definitive than it is.
One of our Facebook friends just sent me a question, asked Dr. Guido if the problems in Texas could have been avoided had they followed federal recommendations they were given in 2011. I guess they had a big weather event like 10 years ago, and they failed to weatherize their grid. This is kind of off, not really your, I don't know how.
I've been reading up on this, though.
Okay.
And I have a point that that I'd like to make.
Sure.
Because what I've understood is that the energy folks in Texas used 2011 as the sort of worst case scenario to stress test their energy system.
Okay.
And I think there was a New York Times article that talked about this, and they came up with under this scenario. So it's like a scenario planning exercise, which is something that we do in my field all the time. They came up with a certain, I think it's like 67 gigawatts of power that they would need under weather conditions that were similar to 2011. Well, turns out that 2011 wasn't that extreme. It was a 1 in 10 year event, and so by no means was it a stress case for the worst case scenario.
So that was the wrong milestone to point, because here we are with this once in a generation, and this one that you're talking about 10 years or so ago was maybe a once in a 10 year event.
Exactly. That so, from a weather perspective, it was once in 10 year, and the point that I would make is that. Set aside the debate about, you know, did climate change cause this or not? Like, we should be thinking about making our systems, like our energy systems, robust to just historical climate conditions.
Right.
And, you know, engineering, for example, they use like a 1 in 50-year flood or 1 in 100-year flood. Insurance, for worst case, goes up to 1 in 500-year event. And so I think there's a lot of room from just learning from the past and looking, well, what is the really extreme case? You know, and then there's, of course, then there's really rich and important conversations that to be had outside of science that go into like cost benefit analysis and all those sort of value statements that and judgments that need to be made that sort of go beyond what science itself is equipped to talk about. But, you know, I think using a worst case scenario as a 1 in 10 year event is maybe underselling the. Underselling it a bit.
Well, they certainly should use this event as kind of their milestone event. I mean, with these records are just unheard of, breaking these records.
Yeah, it's been really, boy, It's been extremely cold in a lot of parts of the country. And I think the other element to this story is just how widespread it's been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to go to like Florida and Arizona for the temperatures really
yes.
to be in you know, near or above average.
You got to be in southern Florida or Key West to have a very good day right now, I'll tell you, weather-wise. All right, we're going to pause right here with Dr. Zach Guido, UA climate scientist. It's the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. When we come back after the break, we're going to bring this discussion closer to home. This winter, we've had one weather event. It was a snow mixed with rain. It was great while we had it. Some good soaking rain, 2 to 3 days period. But, folks, that's it. And other than that, that was the only thing that has kept us in with some moisture. But it's been a very dry winter. More with Zach Guido right after this.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We're all counting the days so we can pile in the car and go somewhere. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico are anxiously awaiting our visitors from Southern Arizona. Right now it's not a great time because of COVID, but the day will be coming when you can take that drive 3 hours east of Tucson, but there's nothing that says you can't start your planning. We hope you do by going to southwestnewmexico.org, where you will find all sorts of recreation opportunities and great places to stay in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Our contributor on climate is with us, Dr. Zach Guido, with me in studio. We've been talking, obviously, about the huge weather event that's going on in Texas. During the break, a caller wondered, Zach, if we're in an ice age and what we are experiencing now is a blip or a warm spell on that. Is that I don't think there's any indication that we're in an ice age.
Well, that, you know, speaks a little bit to my heart, because I was a geologist before a climatologist. And, I mean, if you look back at the geologic record, the things that drive, the expansions of the ice sheets and the ice ages are changes in the Earth's orbit around the sun. So it wobbles, it tilts, and its orbit around the sun changes, shape, and, when you do the calculations and you calculate because of those changes how much incoming solar radiation from the sun strikes the Earth, it goes up and down in the sort of wave-like pattern that is it wiggles, let's say, it aligns up really closely with the expansions of the ice ages, and so 20,000 years ago was the previous last ice age. And since then we've been going more toward warming conditions, because we've had more incoming solar radiation coming in. Prior to 20,000 years ago, the previous ice age to that was 100,000, 120,000 years ago. So that happens. These ice ages happen about every 100,000 years.
Oh.
So we are sort of moving into more a warming period, but not to have that confused with climate change, because the time that these orbital forcings play out are much, much longer than what we are experiencing with global climate change and greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. And you can parse the influence of those two things out very precisely.
Let's take David's call from Marana. Slip your headset on there, Zach, and we'll hear what David has to say. David, what's on your mind?
I have watched documentaries on the Geographic History Science Channel relating to climate change will cause the temperatures to drop, because Greenland, as it gets warmer and warmer, Greenland's going to melt, throw more meltwater in North Atlantic. And it'll disrupt the thermal haline circulation, which moves more water north from the Gulf Stream, North Atlantic, which moderates the climate. And this fresh water coming off of Greenland will not sink for this circulation to work. The warm, salty water moves north from the Gulf Stream to the North Atlantic, and then it gets cold and it sinks and draws more water north and keeps the climate moderate. But when Greenland melts, throws all this meltwater, even though it's fresh, it's not salty. Even though it's cold, it's not salty and won't sink. It blocks the circulation and it shuts it down. And it'll start causing it to be brutally cold on either side of the Atlantic, and it'll spread throughout the northern hemisphere.
That's kind of an interesting theory. What about the snow melt in Greenland? Is that impacting anything?
Well, I think the caller's right about the oceanic circulation and the importance of it. And there's currents that set up that move warm water and redistribute heat through the water around the globe, and so you get this current that moves up the Atlantic coast and over to England, moderates the temperature of England, and then sort of circles around Greenland and then dives down, and it creates this like oceanic circulation pattern. And yeah, there is an active I'm not necessarily up on the latest of this theory, but what I do remember is it is true that the water that would melt off of Greenland is lighter. It's not as dense, because it's not salty, and so it can have effect on that overturning circulation. But I think part of the question that remains unresolved is to what's the rate that's needed to really shut it down? Like how fast do you have to melt the ice to actually shut it down, and is that actually physically plausible? Can we're not just turning up the temperature instantaneously 15 degrees and throwing in a whole bunch of water. So there's rates at which the melt happens, and I'm not up on this, but my recollection is that it doesn't seem like the overturning circulation will shut down because the rates of melt just can't keep pace with that.
All right, we're quickly running out of time. We need to talk about southern Arizona. This winter has been dry. Unfortunately.
I know, man. I really wish we could, after coming on here after the monsoon. It didn't look good then in terms of we had just come off of a failed monsoon, worst monsoon ever in the historical record. And we were moving into this La Nina conditions, which just really sort of tipped the scale. Basically, the La Nina takes off a few storms from the winter, which it has this winter. And it didn't look good that we were going to, have a wet winter. And honestly, it's been bad. I think Tucson is at about 33% of what it normally has at this time. You mentioned in the beginning, we had a couple storms, back-to-back storms in late January. One was pretty warm. The other one that happened, the second one, actually dropped quite a bit of snowpack, which helped the high country. And at that point, Flagstaff, when you looked across the west, was one of the few areas that actually had near median snowpack. And the conditions have we just haven't had a lot of rain or snow, and that's pretty much the case around most of the West. And you have to go to above Colorado and Utah to see above average basin conditions.
It's very odd that was a second event, a daytime snow event in Tucson in 2 years. February of 2 years ago, this February, we had the daylight snow event that went on for hours. And normally, if it snows in Tucson, it's during the night or very early morning hours. Very odd, isn't it?
Yeah, we had this low pressure system waft down. It had a really cold core, and it was still able to pick up moisture from the south, because a lot of times those really cold storms from the north don't have a lot of moisture to them. But this one, just the its idiosyncrasies, if you will, were such that it allowed for moisture to be picked up from the south, and those two things combined, and I think the snow level fell to something like 2,500 feet, and
we had snow right here at the station. that was very interesting driving.
We really needed it at that point, but as you mentioned before, very little precipitation before them and nothing since.
And we'll soon be starting to talk about the monsoon. We need to get back on track for if there is such a thing, a normal monsoon, at least something that was not so unusual that we had last summer.
When I tell you that the dry winter is going to put a lot of pressure on the monsoon.
Oh, boy, will it ever. I mean, let's hope we get – doesn't show any precipitation even in the 30-day forecast?
No, I'm not sure what the outlook is. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be more of the same. And for us here, we're really at the tail end of things. Maybe another month left that we can squeeze out a storm, maybe two storms. But, once we hit – Late March, early April. I mean, it's a descent into the inferno of June.
There you go. I was just going to say, we've got 80 degrees, and soon before you know it, be 90. I mean, we're going to hit 80, I think, even this weekend. So the warm weather is coming. Hot weather right around the corner, I'm sure, comes pretty fast here in Tucson.
I know,
Tucson.
It's hard to say that in February.
Dr. Zach Guido, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you.
That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido, University of Arizona climate scientist, and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. And we're going to talk about the legislature, deep dive into what's going on at the legislature tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. Dave Ramsey talking about your money is next on KVOI, trusted local news and talk. Have a great afternoon.